Raw Galloway, Spinners and Yarns, Series 3, not sure what episode. I'm here with Colin Burnett, author of two books, Working Class State of Mind and Who's Aldo, which has just recently come out. Hello, Colin, how are you?
I'm not bad, Joe. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad at all. Not too bad. Just before we came on, you're from Bonnyrigg, is that where you were born?
Ah, yeah, well, I think I was born in Edinburgh, but yeah, Bonnyrigg, that's where I've lived in Bonnyrigg all my life, just outside Edinburgh. It's only like 20 minutes in the bus for Edinburgh, so it's basically Edinburgh, really. Most folk here put themselves just for the tune, so.
But, I mean, both of the novels are really centred around Edinburgh, aren't they, around Leith? Was there a reason for that?
Well, see, like Leith, I was actually asked this in an interview with the National, the newspaper in Scotland, a couple of weeks ago. The thing I like about Leith, because I've got a lot of pals from Leith, it has a strong sense of its own identity. Like, because when I first got, like, one of my good pals, he's from Leith, John, and I remember when I first met him, I asked him, "Are you from Edinburgh?" And he got really offended. Okay, took really offence by that. He was like, "No, I'm from Leith." And I like places that have a strong sense of their own identity. And Leith really does have that, because although Leithers don't count themselves as from Edinburgh, they sort of see it as a sort of separate from the city. So, and I've been around to Leith quite a lot, kind of like in my youth, because I got a lot of pals from it that way. And obviously, like, I was influenced a bit by Trainspotting as well, to be honest with you, because that was the first real book that I read that sort of. Kind of like projected my own experiences and the people that I sort of encountered in real life.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time in Leith. I you know, all the better football teams I played for were from Leith. So, like, you end up socialising down there, and it is a separate entity to Edinburgh, I would say. But kind of like, so you, when did you start going to school? When was your high school years?
I think I finished up at the high school. I could be off, like, but I think it was about 2006. I was at Lasswade High School in Bonnyrigg.
Yeah.
It was a good school, like, but I remember, like, in English, I always enjoyed English, and I sort of, like, dabbled in writing a wee bit, because it would, like, let you write, like, a short story now and again, and I quite enjoyed that. But I always remember there was a teacher, I think her name was Mrs. Chalmers, if I remember right, and I said, like, oh, I wouldn't mind becoming a writer, because I was getting good feedback about my writing even then for some of the teachers. And she sort of laughed in my face a wee bit, said, "Ken, it'll never happen," and that. So even though, like, I never really set out to be a writer then, that always stuck in the back of my mind. So I sort of used that as motivation to sort of, like, prove them wrong. Because I think, because I'm dyslexic and I'm also autistic, but with the dyslexia, I think some of the teachers sort of wrote me off a wee bit because of my disabilities. And that sort of inspired me a wee bit, especially later on, because I never forgot that, and that sort of encouraged me to write, because I always like to try and prove, like, the misconceptions about disabilities wrong, because, like, even, like, being autistic, I went into university, I was always told by teachers that'll never happen, because they always thought I'd struggle too much if I went there, but I've done really well at university, I studied sociology.
Yeah, I think it was, because I was thinking about this the other day, you know, when I went to school, you know, I might not have been the best pupil, but I looking back in it now, we had class sizes of about 30, maybe 35 kids in one class, and it's too chaotic. You can't learn. Nice. You can't learn anything under those kind of conditions. There's too much going on, you know.
Exactly. Because in any class, you've always got people that are loud and that, and even though if you're not, like, involved in that, it sort of distracts you from your own work. Because I had that sort of experience sometimes in classes. And I always think that, like, especially working class people in school, I think the education system sort of is designed for us to fail, because when I look back at when I was at high school, I had a lot of middle class, and even there been a couple of upper class people actually in my classes. They were always encouraged, like, "You're going to go to university, you're going to go to college." And that expectation was never placed on people like me, because I think it sort of is determined by your own background.
I'm just putting the power back in.
Cool, man. So I think, like, when I look back at school, that expectation wasn't placed on, like, me or, like, some of my pals to go to university and college. I think it was more like, I think you're going to go into, like, trades and stuff like that. There's nothing wrong with that, obviously, because you can make good money out of that. But I'm also dyspraxic, which means my coordination's all out of whack. So, running into a trade was never going to be something for me. So I went to obviously high school, then I went to college, and then went to university.
I went to university a bit later in life when I was 24. You know, and I left school with no qualifications, and it's not a badge of honour, but I kind of like got my education down at Telford
cool.
College, when I wanted to do it. You know, I felt when I was at school, you were pushed into a particular way, and the school that I went to in Livingston was quite chaotic. You know, I don't think any of the kids I went to school with went to university, and I know that's not true because some of them did, but by the time the last 2 years of my education, I wasn't going to school. You know what I mean? It was very sad. You would find me in there. There was more interesting stuff going on outside.
It's
okay. When you left school, was it English O grades you sat, or had they changed them by then?
Well, we were doing hires and standard grade. I got higher English. I enjoyed history a lot. I got higher history. I wasn't really keen. There were some subjects I wasn't keen. Like I said, they done CDT, which is basically woodwork. Okay, I was never any good at that because of my disabilities. I was an absolute walking disaster in the area. So some classes like that weren't really for me. But I always enjoyed history. I liked English. They were the sort of two subjects I was always drawn to because I went to university, it was either going to study sociology or history, because they offered a place at Edinburgh Uni to study history.
Yeah.
But then I thought sociology seemed more sort of the thing I wanted to do. And that's really when I developed my interest in social class, and I carried that into my writing.
Yeah. Okay, that kind of makes sense. So when did you started writing some short stories first, didn't you?
That's how
people became aware of you.
Well, when I was at university, there was a call out for sociological fiction. It was just like you write a short story and then you can enter it and see if it gets published. And I wrote, so I thought I'll have a go at that. And I wrote it. It was actually the first book, it's the first chapter of my first book. And it shares the same name as the actual book, A Working Class State of Mind. Yeah. And it got published and it got picked. And then I started sharing my stories online. And then it started to build momentum because I was getting thousands of views with each story, so I really knew I had something. It took a bit of time to develop it, it grew organically, but that's when I knew I had something, because the interest I was getting in my writing just posting online. I never set it to write a book, to be honest, but once I started to write, I realised I had enough to form a book, so then I tried to get it published, and obviously I managed to get it published. But social media was really where I sort of made my name in writing, through posting stories.
So the first book, A Working Class State of Mind, that's a collection of short stories of different characters?
That book's been introduced to Aldo, Doogie and Craig, who became they're in a lot of the chapter, not every chapter in that short story collection, but in a lot. And then I realised with the feedback I was getting with people on social media that had something with Aldo in particular, because everybody kept banging on about him. At the start, he became at first, I really thought of him as just more as a sort of secondary character.
Yeah.
But with the popularity he was getting on social media, I developed him more and more, and then eventually he became the sort of protagonist. And then obviously he's the main character in the second book.
Yeah. I mean, the only problem that I have with Aldo is his age, and because most of the gangsters that I would know in Edinburgh would be a lot older and. Wouldn't call himself gangsters, let's say that.
Kind
of businessman or they're not, you know.
See, with Aldo, he's not based on anyone in particular, but I knew people like him, when I grew up. Maybe not to his extent, but they had similar traits to him and what they were involved in. I do know what you mean. Because a lot of people compared Aldo to Begbie, especially for the first book, but...
Yeah.
I've always sort of viewed him more as a sort of Tony Soprano character.
Right.
Like an anti-hero sort of. He's not really, he's good and bad. And the List magazine actually said, who's Aldo's, the Soprano set in Edinburgh. So I was really pleased with that comparison because for me, I think if you're going to learn to write, I think The Sopranos is such a great show to develop your writing because it's got everything.
Yeah. But I think the thing with the second book is his relationship with his dog,
which British,
puts him, you know, his tough demeanor is kind of like brought down when he's around his dog and his affection for his dog.
He becomes that's the thing, because when I introduced Bruce, because in the first book he rescues Bruce, Bruce gets abandoned and then Aldo rescues him. Because I wanted to sort of humanize Aldo, and I was either going to have him like get a dog, because I think dogs bring out the best in people, like most of the time, or he has a kid. And I thought if he has a kid like early on, it would sort of limit what I could do with him as a character in terms of like his sort of criminal side. And I know like Bruce is more like Aldo's conscious kid. Like that's what he really is. And like you said, he lets his guard down a lot more when he's around Bruce, because like he does treat him like his son, and even though it's his dog, he views him as his son. And and I think that made him more appealing to people, like readers, because you could see that he's got a soft side as well, as obviously like he can be quite ruthless.
Yeah. So you had a collection of short stories that were brewing, and you were getting attention on social media.
Yeah.
When did you think that you could make it into a novel, a book?
It would probably be about halfway through, because people were saying I would love to read like a novel with these stories, kind of like, because it was getting a lot of traction online, like I said. And so when I got to, well, maybe just over halfway, actually, maybe it was about the seventh chapter, because I think there's 12 in the first book. And then I thought, it was my brother actually, he said to me, because he's a writer as well, he's a playwright and a screenwriter. He said to me, you should try and write a book, kind of like just write more and form a book. So that's what I did. And then obviously, I managed to get published by Leamington Books, and Who's Aldo's published by Tippermore Books in Scotland. The first book was really successful. It got great reviews, got a lot of endorsements, this became quite a popular book, to be honest. I'm quite surprised how well it's done. So,
how did the hookup with Leamington come about then?
Well, Peter, who was my publisher at Leamington Books, he was aware of me through like what I was posting on social media. But I dropped him a message and he said, he's like, I definitely want to have a look at this. And he had he'd heard of me and he was aware of my work. And then they had a look at it and they loved it. And then they decided to publish it. And it was a bit similar to how I got Tippermore Books, Paul from Tippermore Books. I contacted him because, to be honest, even though the first book was successful, I had like a really difficult time trying to get other publishers interested in my work. I don't know, like it was a bit odd, I thought a wee bit, because I thought the first book done really well. It would make it more like accessible, but it never really happened like that. But I'm glad I've got Tippermore Books, because they've been brilliant with me. They're a brilliant publisher. And Paul was really keen on taking his Aldo, and so we just sort of developed from there.
Did Leamington not want to do Who's Aldo?
They were interested in Who's Aldo, and like I've got a great relationship with them, but I wanted to try and see if I could, what sort of interest I could gather, and then ended up with Tippermore Books. But like it was a great choice, because they've been brilliant to work with.
Yeah, but that's you know, kind of like from following you on social media, your Scottishness is quite important to you. So having a Scottish publisher, I would imagine, is something that you'd be happy with.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, I had one, there was a publisher in America who loved the book, and they were quite keen on taking the book, but they said that because it was a Scottish book, that it would probably be better served with a Scottish publisher. I was pleased with the feedback I got from the American publisher, because they did love it. And that's the thing, like when like you're writing in Scots, a lot of people think there's like you're limited, like sort of limited to who you can get access with your work, but I've never really felt that with my own work, because even people like, I've had people from Japan, France, all around the world, and they've never had an issue with writing in Scots. And that was reflected with the American publisher. They said that they were really impressed with the way I'd written the Scots, because it was accessible and it was easy to read.
Yeah. So do you have your own Scottish dictionary? Or do you, when you're typing, when you're writing away, do you just write what's in your head?
Just write what's in my head. Just write is how I would speak. because like obviously it's written in Scots, but it's the Edinburgh dialect, East Coast Scots. So yeah. I just write as like I learned that from my brother, to be honest, because he was writing well before me, and he writes in East Coast Scots. So I learned how to write in Edinburgh dialect through him. And yeah, but yeah, that's what my brother said. Just write how I would speak it, and like the Edinburgh language. Even though I'm not like in central Edinburgh, like we speak the same as what people in Leith speak, and like vice versa, kind of like in all different parts of Edinburgh. So yeah, just write how I would speak in real life.
Yeah, I mean, when I first moved up, I was 11.
Ah, there.
So it was quite difficult to get around the Scottish language when you're an 11-year-old kid. You know, Scottish people are fine, talk really fast.
Aye, that's true, actually. Quite pacey,
and they rattle it off, and it's all quite edgy, and everything moves quick, you know.
I've had a few pals from like England and that, and they've said that it takes a bit of time to get around to like the Scottish lingo, can they catch up with it?
I mean, once you've lived up there for a while, you get your ears accustomed to it. You know, I moved away 94 really, and I didn't come back for about 10 years, and then I started coming back for business, and just kind of like I really struggled getting my ears around what people were saying, even though I'd lived in Scotland on and off for 15 years, you know, and it was the old pace thing. So A Working Class State of Mind came out, and you're quite aggressive on social media, I would say, with regards pushing your message, promoting your books. Yeah. Is that part of your strategy?
Yeah, definitely, because the thing with being like working class in the industry, I think you have to push yourself, because I'll be honest, like the media and Kelly, to be honest, generally the art scene, it shuns a lot of working class people, I think, in my opinion. Yeah. I think you have to push yourself, because I don't think, unless you do that, I don't think you're really going to get anywhere with your work. I mean, not to say it can't be done, but just based on my own experiences, like the engagements I've had with the media up here, and like it seems like they're not really that interested in engaging with working class writing and issues as much as I feel as they should. Because even like I said, Working Class State of Mind was really successful, but I still had a hell of a time trying to get like coverage for it and stuff like that, even though it was doing really well. That is part of my strategy, because I think you have to push yourself out there. It's like when I started posting my stories online, like I was just contacting people asking for retweets and that, because I wanted to try and get it moving, and it did work because I managed to get a lot of traction through that. But I do think if you're working class in the arts, you do have to be willing to put in the sort of graft, because I don't think it's an industry that's just going to present you opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about books is social media can be very useful with regards to pushing out the message and being able to sell copies, which at the end of the day is what the publisher and what the writer wants, is for people to read the stories, you know, read the book. So, you know, as you said, it's, you know, you're responsible, or what you put in is what you'll take out of it in the end.
Definitely.
You know, so it's kind of, obviously, I don't know, you know, what the sales figures are, but if you're, you know, happy with the sales on the first book, that's a major achievement. Well in for you. What kind of feedback did you get from the media?
But even like the places that did engage with my work, they all spoke very highly of it. I'll be honest, I've not really had that many bad reviews in my work, if I'm being perfectly honest, especially in the media. There's been some places that have been really good with me, like the National in Scotland, the Evening News, Edinburgh Evening News, they were really supportive of my work. Yeah. I've actually got a lot of endorsements with celebrities and stuff like that. They've came across my work, so that was cool. And they all spoke very highly of my writing. But yeah, like I always find when you're working class in this industry, you always sort of find that there's like a wall. Okay, at some point, you just have to keep pushing through, and that's why, like, I'm basically my own publicist in a lot of ways, because like I'll try and engage with like media outlets and like social media. I spend more time doing that, to be honest, than I do actually writing, because I always think you have to have an audience. There's no point in me writing if I've not got an audience, because you obviously want people to read your stuff. I do think like people always say like the industry's improving and it's getting more fair for working class people, but I don't see that, because I know a lot of working class writers, not just in Scotland, but kind of all across the UK and even further afield. And we all say the same thing, that it's not an industry that is very welcoming to working class people.
Yeah.
And I do feel that's still the case up here.
Yeah. It's kind of like a lot of writers that I've spoken to all know, you know, you see trying to get a publisher on board is quite a difficult thing for them to do, you know, because there is an entry level and there is a requirement for publishers. And, you know, you're probably right, a working class voice is not something that is required so much these days. You know, if I was, you know, I've had conversations about television with people in, you know, in the 70s or the 80s when I was growing up, television was great. You know, the working class were represented on television. You look at television now, you know, and I haven't turned my TV on for 4 years, you know, but there was nothing on there. There was nothing on there that I wanted to watch.
It's more to ridicule the working class now, I think, in the TV. Yeah. Like you look at, like, I don't know, it's stopped now, but like Jeremy Kyle, I mean, that was just to like embarrass working class people and just try and demonize them. And even you look at a lot of the TV shows, like before, like you said, like in the 80s and that, they had like shows like Avidus and Pet and stuff like that, again, who really engage with the working class experience and like a genuine sort of depiction of working class life. And now, I don't think you get that anymore. Or it's rare at the very least. Yeah. Now it's like dominated by shows like The Crown and Ken, not against the shows. I've never watched that. I've heard it's a really good show, but it seems to be like if you're not like living in like a country mansion and like Ken, a family is loaded, then television that's sort of shun like working class people in favour of stuff like that. And that's not a true reflection of real life, because they sort of people live in a bubble. And to be honest, it's not like it's not getting engaged with a wide audience. And like with my first book, like I lost, like one of the reasons I actually wrote a working class statement, sorry, I should have said that, was because I lost my parents young. And I remember the way we were treated by the state, kind of like after I lost my mum and dad. Yeah. And like I wanted to put the state on trial. So with a working class state of mind and with who's Aldo, I always like to try and like put the state under the spotlight for the way they treat working class people. Because I think there's definitely an imbalance in society.
Yeah. We're right, shadow of a doubt. But you know, one of the things that, you know, the older you get, the wiser you get, you can see how media, television, newspapers, social media is used in order to push you into a particular way of thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and you can clearly see it on Twitter, which is it's the most vile placed social media platform at times.
Oh, definitely, I agree with
that.
At other
times, it's a really great resource, but you know, I'm forever, you know, getting some right wing comment just keeps coming up, you know, and I'm just like, I just ban them, block them straight away because
that's the way you do it.
I don't recognise that they have a voice, because they do, but at the same time, it's being pushed in order for me to think a particular way of thinking, and you know,
it's ridiculous. Because I mean, you look at like the way some of these people talk about like immigrants and that, like they're making it like they're the problem, Britain's the way it is.
Yeah.
It's all these like toffs who end up in power; they're the problem. Yeah. And people try and like they try and pitch working class people against people that are actually like kind of like worse off than us. Like they're just trying to come across to like build out a future for themselves, and we're expected to target them. And when it's really these toffs who come probably eat and end up in the Houses of Parliament. For me, they're the issue. It's not not people who are just trying to better themselves.
But the rules of division, divide and conquer. They've been there for centuries, and they've used it for centuries, but people fall into it, you know.
Exactly.
And it's probably even worse now because social media is so quick. You know, they can get anything out in social media that they want just by having one of their moles put some words up there, and then somebody will retweet it, and then somebody else, and then suddenly people will verbatim that this is the truth, and it's just like, no, it's not. You know, if you look into it and you look into, you know, actually the background to it all, it's not the truth in what you said it, but people instantly, because the news is instant now, jump on it and go, that's it. You know what I mean?
That's it. A lot of working class people are just being programmed to sort of accept their own oppression, I think, in a lot of ways. And that, like you said, like through social media, especially with these right wing twats, like they drip their poison into working class people kind of in their ears, and then we're a lot, not all working class people, but a lot of working class people just accept it as a fact if we're actually questioning like who's the source and why are they actually saying this. Again, it's
So the second book, who's Aldo? It's just been out for what, 2 months? 6 weeks?
2 months, yeah, 2 months, yeah.
How's that been going on?
Yeah, it's been going good, yeah. Like I said, I had a great review with the List magazine, which I was really pleased about because it's quite a popular magazine up here. The Snack magazine, which is not a popular magazine up here, that they gave a brilliant review recently. The reviews have been great. Like, it's just trying to get coverage for the book. That's been the most challenging part because that was like that with Working Class State of Mind.
Yeah.
A Working Class State of Mind sort of grew organically. It started off quite slow, and then the more people were reading it, and the more it was word of mouth really was what really propelled the book. So yeah, it's a slow process because, like I said, like try to engage with the media, like up in Scotland or like down even down south, it is difficult because, like I said, when you start talking about you're writing about like the drug scene in Edinburgh and you're writing about like poverty and that, I don't know. I think there's always they're sort of hesitant to sort of engage with that. Maybe not all the time, but if you're not like a big name, I don't think they're really that too bothered about really covering it. But it's gone well though, don't get me wrong, it is going well. And like I said, the reviews have been fantastic. And one thing I've really enjoyed is that people have seem to really take to the comedy in the book. Because even though it can be quite dark at times, it is really a comedy, a dark comedy, sorry.
Yeah.
So that's been real positive.
But if you were to look particular in Leaf, there was a lot of comedy.
Yeah, there was a lot of comedy.
There was a lot of, you know, in hardship and difficult times, there was a lot of comedy. It was a lot of, you know, there was always fun times, you know, even in moments of darkness, you know. So
Exactly. That's perfect.
And I think people miss out on that, so really, that they, you know, you look at things and how things happen, and you can't take them to heart. You've got to sometimes just grin and bear it and, you know, see the fun side.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's times when I've been, like, situations I've been in, and, like, at the time I'm thinking, oh, this is, like, absolutely murder. But when I look back, they can be quite funny. Like, there was a time, because, like I said, I'm autistic and I've got a few learning disabilities. But I remember I got called up to, it was Argyle House. I don't know if you know that girl. Well, they do, like, their sort of, like, a benefit assessment. So I was on, like, PIP for disabilities, and they took it off me. And then I got put in trial, basically, for it. There was, like, a judge, a doctor, and somebody else. And, I mean, at the time, it was horrendous. But when I look back, it was actually pretty funny because it was just, like, comical. Even my sister, like, she was with me. She was, like, sort of laughing a wee bit because I was in such a state. But, like, she wasn't laughing the fact I was in such a state, but it was just the way it sort of panned out. It was, even looking back, it was actually quite funny. But like you said, even the hardship, you can look back and sometimes you can think, no, I don't think at the time, but it can be actually, you can see humour in it.
So where do you go from here then? What's the third book?
Well, the third book, I've got two ideas lined up. There's one I was going to write about this guy called Mungo Mackay. He was a real life guy. He lived, like, a few years ago, he ran the mining pits out here. He was quite a ruthless guy. So I'm going to write a book about him, but I'm also going to write one about Aldo, and like, because I've got an idea for like Aldo's next sort of adventure. So yeah, I'm not sure what one I'm going to start first, but these are the two sort of ideas that I'm going to go for. So either I write one first and then write the other one, but they two are going to be my next projects.
Have you ever thought about collaborating with your brother? Because I knew that your brother did plays before we started talking.
Yeah. I mean, we've actually spoke about that a few times. Because he recently wrote a brilliant short film called Inner Corner. It's about female boxing and like the gang culture in Edinburgh.
Okay.
And it was recently shown in Berlin, and it got a great response. So yeah, I love writing dialogue. See, like dialogue, that's the thing I love writing most in writing.
Yeah.
So I was actually speaking to him about maybe collaborating and writing a play. Because he obviously he's got like the background and sort of pedigree in like playwriting, so and I love writing dialogue. That's always, if I could, I would just write dialogue because that's the thing I enjoy the most about writing. And people have spoken really highly of the dialogue I've written, so it shows that I could do it. So yeah, I think me and my bar might write a play together. I think that would be a good. I wouldn't mind adapting. I'll do that for the stage. I think that would, kind of like at some point, that would be something I would like to explore.
Any interest on the books for film or TV?
Well, I had a really good meeting, like, sorry, it wasn't the last Christmas, the one before. I had a good meeting with my production company. They loved my book, right? A Working Class State of Mind, sorry, that was on the check. They loved it. And then I wasn't annoyed, but I was a bit miffed because they were bigging the book up and they were like, we're going to write a pitch and we're going to take it to the BBC. And that. They'll love it. So I was like, oh, this is brilliant. So I waited months, and then I messaged them. I was like, how's the pitch coming along? And they're like, oh, no, we're not actually going to do it anymore. The person you were dealing with has left. And I was like, we really should have told you. So I was a bit gutted about that. But there is a couple of production companies who are wanting to have a look at who's Aldo. So that could be promising. So the fact I've even said to look at it, I take as a big positive. So, and a lot of people say that Aldo and that would work really well on the screen. So hopefully maybe one day in the future, if not like soon enough, someday in the future that may happen.
Yeah, he's an interesting character, to say the least. Have you done any book readings, book signings?
We've been artistic in that, I would crumble. Yeah. Ken, like, I'm not really a public speaker, to be honest. I'll be honest with that. I would love to be able to do that, but I have tried, and it causes me too much anxiety. But I mean, I've done a couple of book signings. Last year, I was at, this year, I was at the Fringe as part of Darren McGarvey's show. That was a great experience.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed that. That was the first time I've actually done something properly in front of a live audience, and I really liked that. So hopefully I can maybe do more things in front of live audiences. I think that I would love to do that.
Yeah. But if you take a look at Irving, who's obviously, you know, had inspired you with some of your writing. If you have a look at when he first came into the public face, his speaking might not have been the best or the most comfortable for somebody, but over the time, he'd become a seasoned professional act to people openly.
Yeah. Definitely, because I think it's like anything, it just takes practice. Ken, that's what Dan McGarvey actually said to me when I was at the Fringe with him. He said that. He said, Ken, the more you do these sort of things, the more confident you'll get, and Ken, you'll be more at ease with it. And that is true. It's like anything in life. The more you practice and the more sort of comfortable you come. And but like I said, I'd love to do more things like that. I mean, I'm planning on doing a book launch for Who's Aldo. I had a bit of health, well, Ken, like a bit of personal stuff going on, so I had to sort of delay it. So, and hopefully the next few months I'll be able to do one in Edinburgh. And then again, if I really enjoy that, then I'd like to go into schools. I think that's one thing I would like to do. That's something that's always interested me, because, like I said, like I've got like a lot of disabilities, and I would like to like try and encourage other like students living with similar disabilities to pursue a career in the arts. That's something I've wanted to do, because I think once you see someone who's like being in your position and you see them going on to do like other things, I think that gives you confidence that you could do the same.
Yeah, exactly. And that'd be a good thing. Colin Burnett, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, no worries. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.